welcome to the Fantasy Football Today podcast, everybody. It's Wednesday, April 6th. Adam Azer, Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg. We've got an awesome guest coming on. And Dave, I got to thank you for lining this interview up. We've got an NFL athlete on the podcast for the first time. Way to go.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Adam, I'm pissed at you.
Why?
Because our fantasy baseball team is terrible.
Our team will be justified.
And you jinxed it already.
Why did I jinx it? Because I said it's so good.
How do you jinx the team already?
No, it's in the middle of the first week. Adam hates or has hated every team we've ever shared together and drafted together. And we've done phenomenal. This year, he could not stop raving about our team.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, it's the kibosh. I did the same thing with our team, Jamie. Our AL-only team.
Our AL-only team is fantastic. But Adam just has this knack of, like we talk about all the time, movies everybody else loves, he hates. Mm-hmm. Things that most people like, he hates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody likes the things he likes. So when he likes our baseball team, what do you think is going to happen?
It's going to go in the toilet.
It's going to go in the toilet.
Flush.
And what happened today? We're recording this on what they say? The 6th?
6th.
6th of April. It's a Wednesday. Josh Donaldson, our first round pick, gets hurt.
Yeah, but we don't know what it is. And I don't want to sound stupid in case by the time this is published, it's a minor injury. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that. But we have Jeff Schwartz, NFL offensive lineman, now with the Detroit Lions. Last two years, he spent with the New York Giants, and that has nothing to do with why he's on, okay? I didn't say, Dave, go get me a Giant or anything like that. In fact, he's a Lion now, so please don't call me a homer. But Jeff Schwartz is coming on in a little bit, and he also hosts a podcast. It's called the Block 'Em Up Podcast. Block 'Em Up.
And it's really good.
Yeah, I listened to it.
It's really good.
It's interesting. It's good to have that perspective from an NFL athlete who's just speaking candidly. And hopefully we'll get that to Jeff.
And we're not just having him on just to have him on and just to promote his podcast. Jeff plays fantasy football.
Mm-hmm. I don't care about that. I want to hear about him being one of the few Jewish football players in the NFL.
Really? That's what you want to hear about?
Absolutely.
How is that interesting, exciting, or helpful to getting people to their championships in fantasy? Not that we're really doing a lot to help people to their championship on April 6, 2016.
Well, we are.
We're doing as much as we can.
Yes.
It could be interesting just to see how someone who's, you know, religiously by himself in a locker room in that regard manages with that and how accepted it is or whatever. I don't know that we'll get anything great out of that. But, the NFL locker room could be a pretty religious place from what I understand. These guys are men of faith. So he's
sure.
An odd man out in that regard. I think that could be interesting. Also, with the baseball season starting, if you're interested in placing your bets on baseball games, make sure you go to sportsline.com. Check it out, sportsline.com/FFT if you want to learn more as a Fantasy Football Today listener. You can go there and get A, B, and C grades on every pick for baseball. So we do have news and notes. We have rankings disputes to get to as well. Let's do an email, though. Start with email of the day at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. It just says, from Mike from under the... And it says there's just a blank there. It's got to be under the sea, right?
Sure. Could be under the boardwalk.
Under the bridge?
Down by the sea.
Under the moon?
It could be all of those things.
Under the stars?
Well, how about Mike from under the whatever? I was re-listening to all...
Under the table and dreaming?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one, you Dave Matthews.
That's where he is.
Yeah. Mike from
He's
under the table.
He's going to take those chances.
I'm going to read now. I was re-listening to all of last season's podcasts, which I do every year, and I heard you guys talking about players who get injured during games and how to prevent that from ruining a week. One of my longtime leagues has a policy where if one of your starters gets hurt during the first half of a game and the backup isn't owned by another team, you get the backup's points. What do you think of this rule?
I know of a league. This is obviously a very extreme situation, but it's a 32-team league where you play out, you are assigned a team. So Dave would be the Bears, Adam would be the Giants, I could be the Dolphins, you know, and so that's your team. Whichever quarterback you draft, you automatically get that quarterback. Same situation with the running backs and backup receivers, etc., to avoid these type of scenarios because that's so deep. But I kind of like it. I think it, you know, takes a little bit of the risk out of it. To a certain extent, but I like the fact that the caveat is they have to be unowned. So you do get, you know, and maybe you could even extend it to like, if it's not the second guy, it's the third guy. So like for the Chiefs, for example, you know, the game that Jamal Charles goes down, maybe it's, you know, we all thought it would have been Al Davis, but maybe you are getting the Spencer Ware production. that type of scenario.
You're not getting the player for the rest of the season. You're just getting that player for that game.
Right.
Yeah, but it's weird,
how
though.
How bad would you be if you lost a fantasy game by 1 point, and it's because a guy that isn't even owned by your opponent beat you? It would stink. That would be a terrible. I'm not saying that this is bad.
Right.
I don't mind it. I think it keeps the games competitive, and I think it makes it more fun for everybody. So go with it.
Well, I
could just see some frustration saying, and of course that works both ways, because you could be the one who wins.
Right.
Because you had player A get hurt, his backup comes in, you get the points, and you're on your way to a merry victory.
What was the scenario? I'm trying to think of a scenario last year where there was a guy that got hurt early in the game. And the backup came in and did well.
Well, can I just interject here? Because I absolutely hate this. I think if you're going to do this, if you're going to do this, then it needs to be that you have to own the guy, because it's not fair. Why should I be penalized? Like, if I own Jamal Charles and somebody else has his handcuff, and you own LeSean McCoy or whatever, and nobody has his handcuff, why should you be at an advantage? It should make you make the choice of having to use a roster spot on a guy. So if he's on your bench, you get him.
So I have a suggestion. What if you got the points for the backup, but you had to cut somebody on your team to get the points and pick up that player, and that was your first waiver claim for the following week?
I don't know.
Too much? Do you follow what I'm saying?
I kind of. I just think it's I don't know.
So I have a question, though. If you have the backup, do you automatically get the points in the scenario?
Yes, that's the thing. If you want to make this a rule.
Okay, so if you know your league going in, that if you have Carlos Williams and you're the LeSean McCoy owner, if something happens to McCoy in the middle of the game, you get Carlos Williams' production from that point forward.
Yes.
And it's only from that point forward.
You can determine whatever you want it to be. I would guess that makes sense from that point forward. It's a little bit difficult to do that scoring, I would imagine.
I would argue that the better thing to do in that case would be to just use team running backs and cut your rosters by one or two. Because then making it so that everybody is forced to go out and carry the backup ball.
Well, Adam's complicating what the rule that this league uses is, mm-hmm. which is just if that guy's unowned, you get that production, which makes it simple.
But what about a team that uses multiple running backs? And your back gets hurt, you get the points for the guy that comes in for him? Or do you get, like, how does that work?
Yeah, sure. There's obviously got to be some sort of, limitations on who it is.
Right. Because that complicates it, though.
In the Giants scenario, if Rashad Jennings goes down and Andre Williams scores a touchdown, but Shane Vereen gets 60 total yards, which one are you counting? You know, or 80 total yards?
Is that's
it,
why
you know,
it's
the six
dumb.
Points of Williams, or is it the 8 points of Vereen?
That's whereas why my idea is better.
Giants, whereas if you have any Giants backup running back, you can just get those points, whoever it is.
Yes, exactly. My idea is better.
I do kind of like your idea, Adam.
Also, though, the thing that you find is most of the top backup running backs are owned anyway. You know, I mean, if you're talking about a 12-team league, usually a lot of the top guys are already on rosters. So you are probably looking at the third-string guy in some certain scenarios. Like, Jerry McKinnon may not have been owned in a lot of leagues, but Carlos Williams was.
Yeah, but... but if Peterson gets hurt, it rewards you for having McKinnon.
But in this league scenario, you get McKinnon's production. But again, that's a small sample size, because most of the secondary running backs, the handcuffs that you typically think of, are usually owned.
Well, Mike from Under the Table and Dreaming, excellent question. Thank you for the thought.
I don't know if it's an excellent question. It's interesting.
Yeah. I think it's more excellent that he went back and listened to all last year's podcast.
That is pretty damn excellent.
How many times must have we sounded like idiots? Start this guy, and then he goes out and has 40 yards.
Hopefully fewer times than we sounded like geniuses. But, just to remind everyone, Jeff Schwartz coming on in a little bit. We're going to talk to him about the Giants' backfield last year and, you know, if one of those guys could maybe – take that job and run with it. We're going to focus also on the Lions this year and Marvin Jones coming in, Amir Abdullah, what he thinks about Amir Abdullah, etc.
And so, Jeff plays fantasy too, Adam.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll get his fantasy philosophies as well. I'm looking forward to that. Now, LeSean McCoy will not face charges for his role in a fight in Philadelphia. Does this change anything for you guys?
Nope, not at all. He's still one of the better running backs you can get. But here's a perfect example. This is a guy who you're going to want to handcuff, and Carlos Williams has to be on your list if you're going to get shady.
Hypothetical.
I think it's a mistake if you take him and not Carlos Williams.
Hypothetical. Either one of those guys gets 300 touches in the Bills offense. Who would you prefer it to be, LeSean McCoy or Carlos Williams? In other words, who do you think would actually have a better season as a featured back?
McCoy.
Dave. But just being selfish and greedy, I'd rather have Williams because I can get him with a pick later on in my draft.
No, not in this scenario.
No, he's just talking about who's going to be better with the same amount of touches.
Yeah, Shady.
Okay.
But it is a valid question because Carlos Williams was very electric.
Yeah.
In the time
he was such a good fit for that offense, but LeSean ended up being a good fit too.
Denver was trying to trade for Colin Kaepernick. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Rashad Perryman not back to full strength after tearing his PCL and missing the entire 2015 season. So how worrisome is that right now, Jamie, for Rashad Perryman?
It's worrisome. I mean, you know, you're looking at a guy that they have invested heavily in last year. It's pretty telling why they went out and got Mike Wallace, because they want somebody to fill that role if Perryman's not ready. And look, there's also speculation Steve Smith's not going to be ready, you know, coming off the Achilles injury. So this is an offense that is going to be desperate for receiving help maybe early in the year. And Joe Flacco's not even ready. You know, I think it was at somebody's camp or
– Torrey Smith had a basketball
– Right, and he was just shooting
charity.
Ball
right.
Without
he couldn't
jumping.
Play in the
right.
game. He thinks he'll be ready to go for
Yeah, I'm sure camp. He'll be fine. And hopefully these guys will be ready, you know, come the beginning of September. But it's just, you know, Kevin White – just to, you know, these two guys are going to be linked together until they start to separate from each other. Kevin White's already running. I spoke to Jeremy Langford. I said, you know, have you talked to Kevin? Have you seen Kevin? He said he looks great. Looks like he did before the injury. So, you know, he's trending in the right direction. Whereas Rashad Perryman, this is getting more and more worrisome if you're, you know, hoping for him. Certainly in dynasty leagues, a lot of people drafted him early last year.
Jamie, you had a chance to talk to a couple of the second year backs, Jay Ajayi and Jeremy Langford.
Yeah, I went to Tony Villani. You hear me mention his name a lot. You know, he's a trainer down here in Boca Raton, Florida, and he works with a lot of these guys. Those are two guys that he has in his program this offseason. Langford is somebody that he worked with at the combine last year, and he ran the fastest time of any running back. So I asked him, you know, what are you doing to try and improve him, you know, help him improve this year, you know, given the fact that he could be in line for a bigger role. And he said, you know, basically just keeping his head on right and helping him, you know, put on a little bit more muscle on top of what he showed last year to prepare him for a bigger role. I think it's pretty clear, you know, based on, you know, Adam, we talked about this following the owners' meetings, what John Fox said in regard to Langford and his role, and how it was kind of a lukewarm response. But I think you look at the way it's shaking out right now, that it's going to come down to what they do in the draft. But Langford, you know, he averaged 20 fantasy points in the three games that Matt Forte was out. You know, I mean, it was a little bit inflated. You know, he had two really great games against the Chargers and the Rams, and then he had, you know, a mediocre game against the Broncos, but he still scored in that game. There's a lot to like about him, but we'll see, you know, of course, what they do. And John Fox's history suggests, you know, using multiple guys outside of when he had Matt Forte. In terms of Ajayi, you know, again, similar situation. It's looking very good for him, you know, given the fact that the Dolphins missed on C.J. Anderson, they missed on Chris Johnson. Again, they could be the team that, you know, is a landing spot for Ezekiel Elliott at 13th overall in the draft. That makes a lot of sense. But I think you look at Ajayi, you know, his long-term future is, you know, what's in question because of the bone-on-bone situation with his knee, which, you know, Tony told me the one thing that he was watching as from a trainer perspective was, does he favor one side when he's running, you know, because he evaluates those things. He said he didn't see anything that would make him think that his knee is an issue. And he said, you know, for him, his goal is, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, you know, can he get to that next contract? I think from Ajayi's perspective, you know, he's approaching it as, you know, wants to be the starter. But again, it'll come down to what they add. I think the one thing that's interesting with both these guys is Jeremy Langford just played for Adam Gase. Jay Ajayi's about to play for Adam Gase. I asked them both, you know, are you talking to each other? You know, Jeremy, are you helping, you know, Jay in what to do in a Gase offense? And, you know, are you asking Jeremy about what to do in an Adam Gase offense? And, you know, they said, yeah, we've had a lot of conversations about that, you know, and the interesting, you know, conversation back and forth. I wrote about both the guys, you know, if you want to read about it on the site in terms of what their outlooks are for this year.
And C.J. Anderson almost kiboshed both of their fantasy values.
Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, that Anderson was going to go follow his former head coach in John Fox to Chicago and then his former offense coordinator in Adam Gase to Miami.
Well, last note here, 7 New England fans are suing the NFL to get their first round draft pick back. Patriots first round draft pick back this year.
That's a good use of your time.
What'd you say?
That's a good use of their time.
Well, what I really want to know, I'm not going to criticize Patriots fans for this. There's only 7 of them. I'm not going to, you know, generalize, but what kind of a lawyer takes this case?
One who's looking for free publicity, Adam.
It's ridiculous.
Lionel Hutz. Lionel Hutz is the one banging down the door of the NFL representing 7 Patriots fans saying, give me back my pick.
Works on contingency. Money down.
I hope they have to call Robert Kraft as a witness.
Right. Never interrupt my Simpsons quotes, by the way. All right, let's do some rankings disputes.
Well, you forgot the great news about Stephen Ridley signing with the Lions.
Yeah. Well, ask Jeff about it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, well, ask Jeff.
Let's do 10 minutes of analysis on it.
All right, so looking at your standard scoring rankings, and we'll mention PPR as well. Todd Gurley, number 1 for Dave. Le'Veon Bell, just running backs, number 1 for Jamie. Now, Dave, you do have Bell number 1 in PPR, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell. Dave, you can kick it off. Standard scoring.
It's a nitpick, but I know we've seen Le'Veon Bell get hurt each of the last 2 seasons. If we're guaranteed that he's going to play 16 games, I think I would probably take Le'Veon Bell. But I know Todd Gurley had the ACL injury in college. I know he had, what did he have, like a toe injury that kept him out of week 17 last year? I feel like the combination of Gurley getting most of the work in St. Louis and Gurley, is it crazy to say that he's a little bit less of an injury risk than Le'Veon Bell?
Maybe.
I think that puts him over the edge. And I don't think D'Angelo Williams is going to completely vanish and Le'Veon Bell is going to just, you know, hog all the work in Pittsburgh. I bet they reward D'Angelo. They're not going to give him a dozen touches a game, but I bet he gets in there for 6 or 7 touches a game. And I don't think Trey Mason will get that much in St. Louis. And that offense in St. Louis is going to run through Gurley. Jeff Fisher, God bless him, he hasn't gotten the memo that the NFL is, you know, a passing league, and Pittsburgh will put the ball in the air a lot. Not that that'll hurt Le'Veon. He'll catch a lot of passes. It's a nitpicky choice and certainly a personal choice, but I'll take the younger back in Gurley.
Okay, Jamie, let's go with your Le'Veon Bell argument here in standard
scoring. It's the receiving ability. I mean, you know, again, you're nitpicking. These two guys are going to be special talents, but Le'Veon's proven that he could be an exceptional, if not one of the best receiving backs in the NFL, and I haven't seen that from Gurley yet, and I don't know if he'll ever get to the Le'Veon's level. So, I mean, the injury concern is definitely valid with Bell, and he's still not cleared to I think he's running straight. He's not doing any lateral movements yet. At least that was the reports. But Tomlin, when I asked him about it at the owner's breakfast, the coach's breakfast, the owner's meeting, you know, he said, we're not worried about what will happen come August. You know, by that time, we expect Le'Veon to be ready.
I mean, we're certainly ranking Le'Veon Bell as if he'll be ready to go.
Oh, absolutely. Right. But, you know, if he's not, clearly Dave will keep, you know, Gurley at 1, and I'll probably make the switch from, you know, Gurley from 2 to 1. So it's not like I dislike Todd Gurley. But I do think, you know, he plays in the tougher division. His team around him is still completely miserable. And, you know, I wonder if I shouldn't even bring that, but I think you look at what Le'Veon's situation is and just how he's, you know, D'Angelo may take him off the field a little bit, but I don't think D'Angelo takes him off the field to really impact him in any, you know, stretch to take him away from what his role should be for the Steelers, which is going to be impressive.
Dave, let me just bring something up. Well, both of you. St. Louis was blown out 3 times in their last 7 games. Gurley had 12, 9, and 9 carries in those 3 games. So does that factor into, and he didn't do well with those carries.
Their defense definitely got worse. And so that's going to, you know, hurt them in regard to, you know, staying ahead in games, especially with Case Keenum as their quarterback.
But he does come off the field. Or he did last year when they were getting blown out. They're probably going to be bad again. Is that a big concern for you, Dave, Todd Gurley?
That might happen early on in the year just as a way to preserve him. Like if they're losing 34-3 and it's the fourth quarter, they're not going to put him out there. But no, it doesn't really concern me. I think the upside with him is too big. And there are plenty of times where even Adrian Peterson doesn't get as many carries in a game as you'd like him to get. Jamal Charles, there's a mindless game every year where Andy Reid only gives Jamal Charles like 8 carries. And it drives everybody crazy, but it happens. It's going to happen to every running back. The fact that it happened to Gurley 3 times last year, I bet it doesn't happen that many times this year.
Okay, next up. Jamie has Lamar Miller sixth in front of the following running backs: Devontae Freeman, Mark Ingram, LeSean McCoy, and Doug Martin. So Lamar Miller is ahead of Devontae Freeman, Mark Ingram, LeSean McCoy, and Doug Martin. Dave has Lamar Miller 10th behind all four of those guys. Jamie, you're the high man on Lamar Miller. Kick it off.
You know, it's really more of concern about the other four guys than what I think Miller's going to do. Because I think, you know, you look at Miller last year or the last 2 years, you know, he's been a top 10 running back with such limited work. And obviously we're all expecting him to get more work with the move to Houston, you know, getting away from the Miami situation, you know, going to a team that spent money on him and clearly seems to value him. Bill O'Brien's history suggests you're going to see a lot more running or a good amount of running. I love the division that he's in because the defenses there are pretty miserable. So I think you look at what Lamar Miller's upside is. If you just give him his yards per carry, you know, stays around the same reception total, the upside to me is off the charts. Freeman, I think you're going to see a downturn because of more work for Tevin Coleman. I think you look with Ingram, his injury history, LeSean McCoy, and the work you're going to get from Carlos Williams as well. Doug Martin, is he in there too?
Doug Martin's in there too.
Yeah. And, you know, Martin makes me nervous too because of what Charles Sims does as a receiver. And does Martin get complacent coming off the contract situation? All those guys are good. I think, again, you know, to use Dave's word in terms of nitpicking, you're nitpicking on all these guys. I just think, you know, to me, the upside of what Lamar Miller is in a situation where he's probably not going to share many carries. I don't think they're going to, you know, use Alfred Blue to sub him on a lot of rushing downs. I don't think you're going to see Jonathan Grimes take him off the field in a lot of passing situations. So I just love his opportunity going to Texans. It's one of the most perfect situations for a guy that has upside going to a team that likes to run the ball, with a coach that likes to run the ball, with a good offense around him.
So you're taking Lamar Miller round two, no question, but probably earlier in round two.
No, I still take receivers over him, but he's in the back end of round two.
So, okay. That's where I would take him too. I just think you're going to see more running backs go. And I could get nervous about Ingram, McCoy, and Martin compared to Lamar Miller. I'm going to keep Devontae Freeman ahead of him. I think Freeman has a chance at getting more work, even with Tevin Coleman. I don't know if I'm buying that Tevin Coleman's going to take a lot of work away from Devontae.
Dan Quinn said,
I know.
It was really telling that, you know, he kept stressing the word. He's like, yeah, we really like Devontae, you know, catching the ball in the backfield. We're going to see him line up as a receiver. I was like, wow, that's, you know, interesting, especially the way that they started the year. Remember, before Coleman got hurt, he was the guy those first two games.
Coleman was. He earned that in training camp. And Coleman's basically his only role is like running downs back. I don't think he's a good third down back.
No.
I think he's good enough to work the goal line if they want to. But I think Devontae is just as good in that role. I don't think it's going to be that dramatic of a split. I think Devontae ends up getting a lot of work, and those catches will make up a ton of difference to help him. And I think Lamar Miller is going to get a lot of catches too. I might have Lamar Miller ranked a little too low.
Okay. So, looking at wide receiver rankings in standard scoring leagues. Now, Brown is number one. Antonio Brown is number one in PPR. But in standard, Jamie has Brown number one. Dave has Odell Beckham Jr. as his number one wide receiver in standard scoring leagues. Make your case.
I didn't like what happened last year when Ben Roethlisberger got hurt. It's the only reason. That's it. And even with Ben Roethlisberger getting hurt last year, Antonio Brown put up huge numbers in non-PPR.
Well, he's the number one receiver.
Right. And I just think Odell Beckham takes it a step further. I think the Giants' passing game is going to continue to do well. Their run game, I don't see it getting any better. So I think you're going to see Odell Beckham have, in his third season, his best season, and he'll knock Antonio Brown off the perch. But in PPR, I would take Brown over Odell Beckham.
Okay, and Beckham obviously missed a game due to suspension last year, so trying to look up just how far back he was.
I can tell you.
He was 22 points, so he probably wasn't catching Antonio Brown even if he played another game, but he might have. You never know. Jamie, you still have Brown ahead of Beckham.
Yeah, and I like him even better with the Martavis Bryant suspension because that's more targets that are going to go in his direction. I think you're going to see another monster year for Antonio Brown. I don't see any reason why there's – He's the best player. He should be the first player drafted. I mean, he's clearly been consistent. He posts dominant stats week after week, year after year. And, I mean, you know, sure, Ben Roethlisberger could get hurt again. Eli Manning could get hurt for the first time in his career. You know, I mean, anything can happen in terms of the way an NFL games go. So I don't really worry about Ben Roethlisberger's injury impacting Antonio Brown's status for this season. He's going to be a monster once again.
The one thing that I definitely liked out of last year is that Odell Beckham had a better consistency rate for fantasy than almost every other receiver in the league. There were a couple others. Brandon Marshall was more consistent.
But don't you think Brown would have been more consistent if Roethlisberger didn't get
hurt? Sure. But I'm not sure that he's going to get even more targets with Martavis Bryant out. And in fact, I don't know if he'll be – he was pretty dang good without Martavis Bryant playing last year. His first three games, if you go back and look, 19, 27, and 10. Everybody will sign up for those three games right now with Antonio Brown. So I think he can still do a great job. I'm placing the chips on Odell Beckham having a monster third year.
I don't know if the targets will go up. I mean, he had 196 targets, Antonio Brown. 193, excuse me. Julio Jones led the NFL with 204.
Yeah. But Odell had 159. So there's room for him to move up.
Who I was talking to at the owners' meetings that said they're fairly confident Brown breaks Marvin Harrison's record of receptions.
In a single season.
This season, yeah.
Yeah. But you know who else might do it is Julio Jones. So sure. I'm wondering why you guys both have Odell Beckham ahead of Julio Jones. Now they're 2-3. Jamie has Jones ahead of Beckham in PPR. Dave does not. Maybe I'm going to be arguing with you guys on this one. I think I would take Julio Jones ahead of Odell Beckham.
I don't disagree with that. I think all three guys are going to be spectacular. So you're finding some minor flaw with one over the other or something you like better over the next one. But yeah, I agree with you, Adam. He's going to be the focal point of the offense once again. Especially in their passing game. I Julio Jones, when he's healthy, he's physically the best receiver in the NFL. Can he post the better stats than Antonio Brown? Remains to be seen, but he's a monster. All three of these guys are amazing. That's why you take them 1, 2, and 3 in your draft.
Do you think Julio has a shot at getting 200 targets again?
Sure. Absolutely. Especially with Mohamed Sanu is the only guy that they added.
Right. I'm not worried about that. I'm just wondering if there is any regression in his target/catch total, it'll impact his yardage. And he's never been a monster touchdown guy.
But that's the thing, Dave. I think looking at the targets and the catches is almost secondary to this weird thing with both Julio Jones and Matt Ryan. They are allergic to touchdowns. It's like Odell Beckham, 13 touchdowns in 15 games. Julio Jones has had one season with more than 8 touchdowns. And Matt Ryan has had, I think, one season with 30 touchdowns. It's just so weird. Yeah, go ahead.
It's the Gary Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan situation of when you get inside the red zone, you run.
He had one more red zone target than Odell Beckham.
No, but what I'm saying is, just in terms of the receivers, think about Andre Johnson all those years we complained about how his production was. He
maxed out at 9 touchdowns.
Catches were amazing. Yards were amazing. Touchdowns, he couldn't get over 10. You look at what happened to Demaryius Thomas last year with Gary Kubiak, over 100 catches. What would he have, 1,300 yards? And his touchdown production dropped by 6. Julio Jones and a Kyle Shanahan offense. Targets are going to be amazing. Catches are going to be amazing. They just don't work well in the red zone for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, I just look at the numbers and say this has got to be the biggest fluke in NFL history that Julio Jones has one season with more than 8 touchdown catches. Because, I don't know, should we eliminate the possibility? Well, not eliminate, but seriously downgrade the possibility that Julio Jones catches 13 touchdowns?
Awesome. No, I don't think.
But who's more likely to do it?
Beckham and Brown, certainly.
Yes.
I guess you'd have to go that way. What if the Giants add a receiver in like the second round?
No, they need to. I mean, look at the receiving corps.
Yeah, it's awful.
It would be nice to see them add somebody of talent.
But would it hurt Odell Beckham in your mind?
I don't think there's not anybody, unless they went at 10 and drafted, any of the elite guys or, elite guys, any of the top tier rookies, whether it's Treadwell or Fuller
Corey Coleman
or Dotson, any of these guys can certainly impact Beckham, but nothing's going to make Odell Beckham fall to, lesser talent or lesser fantasy appeal.
But I'll turn that question around on you, Adam. Let's say they don't add any receivers, period. And so their starting receivers going into 2016 are Odell Beckham, Victor Cruz, and Dwayne Harris.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I think that could actually hurt Odell.
I don't. It wasn't any better this year.
I don't know. I think Reuben Randall is still a little bit better than Victor Cruz is.
He's still seeing the best cornerback, whoever they add.
He's still seeing coverage, right, tilted his way, and he's still beating it.
Yeah, he's incredible, so I don't think there's any stopping him. I was going to give you one more, but I will save it till next week, and I think I kind of picked at the top of your rankings. I'll go a little bit deeper into the rankings next week when we talk, but let's bring on Jeff Schwartz right now. Talk to Detroit offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz. Should be a good one. And now we are pleased to be joined by Detroit offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz. Now, Jeff, I know we don't have a lot in common, but you are a podcast host. That's pretty awesome. The Block 'Em Up podcast. How did that start? And we were listening earlier in the day. Man, it's really good. Congratulations. And I encourage everyone to listen. So tell us about the podcast.
Yeah. You know, I was on IR and I was talking to my buddy, who's my co-host Duke. And, we're like, you know, there's a lot of offensive line, like thirst for knowledge on Twitter. I think with the All 22 film coming out a couple of years ago, people have been able to watch offensive line play a lot more and they talk about it on Twitter and, they often don't talk about it correctly or properly. So Duke and I first started this journey to just kind of enlighten people on offensive line play. We talk a lot about scheme, technique, certain things we do like, dislike. And then we've slowly branched off into other things. You know, we have one coming out today about, and we talked about the best walk-off moment. You know, what sport has the best walk-off moment? Talked a little bit about offensive line play. We do Twitter questions. So it's a lot of fun. It's fun to host it. I've never hosted anything like that before. So it's a good experience.
Yeah, hosting podcasts is certainly a lot of fun. What are some of the misconceptions about offensive linemen that you have cleared up?
You have to hate Pro Football Focus, don't you?
Right.
No, I don't hate them. Too. We're actually...
No, it's okay.
We're actually
going to
have
them
on. No. I've graded very well on Pro Football Focus, so I can't. I'm not going to totally. No. I've talked to them before about the way they grade offensive linemen. I mean, you know, I think a couple issues I have is that, you know, with social media, it's hard to, in general, but context of a play. You know, you can just show a clip. Like I saw one, you know, where they're showing a clip of a college kid, and you don't know the play.
Right.
That's a big issue. And then I think, you know, just some, this simple stuff we always talk about on the podcast is how people think you could just move somebody to a different position on the offensive line. It's just like snap of the finger. The guy's good to go. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that for veterans. Doesn't work like that for rookies. There are guys you can move around, but in general, it's not as easy just moving a tackle to a guard or a guard into out to tackle. This is not as easy. We talk about that a lot because that seems to come up. People ask that a lot.
And it's like that at every position, too. It's not just the offensive line. I've talked to Darrell Revis about playing one side of the field at cornerback versus the other side of the field. And it's almost like, you know, asking a right-handed batter to play left-handed or to hit left-handed, I should say. It's a little different. Same thing with receivers and where they line up. Maybe it's a little bit easier for a receiver, but some just don't quite get it. And I think that it's a really interesting point. And the fact that you just don't know the play, you don't know what's asked, and then you have to have somebody independently grade it from afar. I assume that it's made you kind of question people judging offensive line talent.
It's probably funny you mentioned corner because it's funny you mentioned corner because playing corner and playing offensive line are very similar. Mm-hmm. Which people don't realize. You're backpedaling. You're going backwards against, corners and wide receivers athletically are very similar, but you're backpedaling. You're using your hands. You have to, you know, make a stand at some point. And we have a lot in common. And I could see where moving a corner from side to side would, alter their play.
Jeff, let's talk about
you in the slot corner, Jeff.
Yeah. Slot corner.
Slot corner. Yeah. I'll just play cover three and just roll down the hook and curl, not move very much.
Jeff, let's talk about the Detroit Lions. You're a new member of the Lions. Things are going to be a little bit different for them. No Calvin Johnson. They had the worst running game in the NFL last year. Have they given you any indication that they're going to, you know, be more of a running team this year?
I did ask them about that because I was surprised. You know, they have a decent offensive line. They have good young running backs. They have a good fullback. So I was surprised when I looked up the stats and saw they were last. I think a lot of it has to do with just style of play. The first half of the season, they had a different offensive coordinator and they weren't big into running the ball. You know, they had a game where they only rushed the ball five times, I believe. And the second half of the season, they, you know, with Jim Bob Cooter in there, he, great name, by the way. you know, he really is stressing running the ball more. And, you know, I think we'll try to run it, more than they did last season.
Do you call him Jim Bob or Coach Cooter?
I don't know yet. most of the time I call coaches coach, just it's a respect thing. And I'll probably just say coach. I don't know if I'll say – I don't know. That's a good question.
I think it should be Coach Cooter.
I mean,
Coach
I'm Cooter almost 30 what about, now, so what calling about anyone coach might be too much. Yeah, I could do that maybe. I have to see like what everyone else calls him first.
Amir Abdullah was somebody we really liked last year in fantasy. And also, I want you to talk about fantasy because I know you're a big fantasy football player. Should we draft Amir Abdullah this year? Is he going to have a big year? What are your impressions of him?
Oh, he's a good young kid. His first touch last year, he went 80 yards for a touchdown. You know, I think that the NFL is moving towards more of a running back by committee, which I think hurts fantasy. I just think the running backs get so beat up that they're trying to limit as many touches that, you know, as they can get, trying to give them a little break here and there. So I don't know if a team like us with Abdullah, we just signed Ridley, we have Theo Reddick, you know, we have a lot of running backs. So I can't say who's going to get the most touches. I think we're going to try to spread it around a little bit more, like, you know, kind of like we did with the Giants last year.
I gotta jump in on that because boy did that frustrate me with the Giants. Why did they spread it around? Like commit to someone.
It frustrated us also. Don't worry. I don't know. You know, when Rashad got the rock at the end of the season, last four games, I think he had 700 yards.
Yeah.
And he ended up with a career high. Like he had like 1,200 yards, I think, in limited carries the first 12 weeks of the season. I don't know, you know, why they did that. You know, but Rashad is a good running back, and I hope they give him more carries. And, you know, we got better as offensive line last year, so they can continue giving him, you know, the rock and mixing Darkwood in there a little bit. You know, they could be a good running team.
Dave?
Yeah. No, you know, I was too busy looking up Rashad Jennings' stats from last year.
I think he had 1,200 yards, didn't he?
He had 863 rushing, 296 receiving. So pretty much 1,100 yards. Yeah. From scrimmage, four touchdowns.
Jeff, you're not his teammate anymore. You don't have to pump up his stats.
Wait, I could have sworn that he had more than that.
No.
You must be thinking of Andre Brown because he was fantastic.
You mean Andre Williams?
Andre Williams.
No, yeah. Rashad. Oh, yeah. Well, then maybe the stat I saw was that he had the most yards from scrimmage in his career. But That is true.
He did have the most yards from scrimmage in his career. And
that's what I saw then. That was 1,100 yards. That was close, okay?
Yeah, no, it's not bad off the top of your head. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So now Detroit does it, and we talked about how everybody in the NFL is going to go with this tandem approach. Would you go as far as to say that even teams can't necessarily plan for that and that each running back just sort of has their role? And then when Sunday comes and the game unfolds, the best coaches anyway go with the flow and they don't try and say, all right, Amir Abdullah has to have 15 touches this week, but they just kind of go with how the game goes. If you're down by two scores, you might see the passing downs running back in there more often until they get to the goal line. And then, you know, you're going to have the more physical running back in there. Is it safe to say that that's going to happen more?
Well, I think a good example of that is what Carolina does. Even when I was in Carolina with Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams, you know, they both came in the game kind of getting equal carries, and you just ride the hot guy. You know, when you have two guys that are equally talented, obviously if you have one guy who is supremely talented over someone else, you want to give him the rock more often. But I think that when you have guys that are very closely, you know, talent wise, then you kind of just ride the hot guy throughout the game. But I do think though that in the running game, it's very important to get a rhythm going. And you need a running back to continue to get carries and run the same plays over and over again to get that rhythm going. It takes, you know, a running back might get 3 yards on a rush in the first quarter. You run call again the second quarter. He gets four. He gets six when you run again. And by the fourth time, you know, you get 8 yards, 9 yards because you know where it's going. You see what the defense does. So there is something to getting a running back in a rhythm by giving him 25 or 30 carries.
And in your time, have you noticed that some coaches understand that and other coaches may not pay as much attention to that?
Yeah, I think there are times when, especially early in the season, where when you have a lot of running backs, you might want to get them X amount of carries to see what they're going to do. But, you know, I play with Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles. You give them the ball. It doesn't matter who's the backup is. When you have a guy that's special. But when you have guys that are closely grouped in talent, I do think that some coaches do feel the need to get X amount of carries out of each guy early in the season and then kind of see where it goes maybe in the middle to the end of the season.
All right, if you're going to pick a running back for this year, Adrian Peterson or Jamal Charles?
It's probably be Adrian. I mean, Jamal's coming off injury. That offensive line, you know, they got my brother now.
Yeah.
Maybe. you can, here's my thing with fantasy is I've played three times. I've won all three times.
Wow.
And it's always because I have the best running backs.
Yeah, like that helps.
That's 2011, I had Adrian Peterson, and then 2014, I had Marshawn Lynch and DeMarco Murray. and I had Gronk. That was a good year. And last year, I had who are my running backs? They were very good.
They weren't Giants.
Jamie said that, not Giants.
I forget who they were. But running backs get a lot of points. They get a lot of touchdowns.
They do.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's going to get harder and harder for people in fantasy to find those running backs because of what teams are doing, splitting up the reps from game to game. So going back to the Lions, if we had to kind of place a role on each of these three guys, I almost feel like at this point, Amir Abdullah is the running downs back for them and their lead, their feature back with Riddick. I don't know if he's as good of a running downs guy, but he's great catching passes out of the backfield. And I figure Ridley will fill in the gaps and especially work at the goal line. It sounds like a decent plan as far as it can go in April. What do you think
September? I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I know Riddick is a great out of the backfield, passing the ball. Catching the ball. So that definitely is a possibility. You know, how many teams really put in a different running back on the goal line, though? Carolina? I mean, I can't think of many other teams that just, you know, if one guy's hot, you just leave him in, I think.
I think it all. Coach. A lot of the times it lands on the shoulders of the running downs back. So the lead back also is the goal line back. You'll very rarely see the guy who's working third downs also get the goal line carries. Fred Jackson did that in Buffalo.
Well, Jeff, didn't you have that with the Giants a little bit with Andre?
Andre Williams was supposed to be that guy
for a little bit, and then I think he blew it.
He blew it,
to be quite honest. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. Do you think that I always thought it was a little overrated? Like, a small guy can get into the end zone. I remember with the Giants, Ahmad Bradshaw was just as good at it as Brandon Jacobs was. Do you think some running backs are more suited, or do you think just about anybody can plow it in from 1 yard out?
No, I do think there are running backs that are built differently that can succeed on the goal line. You have to run downhill. You have to run fast to the hole. There's not a lot of decision making on the goal line. I mean, there are teams that run predominantly stretch or zone, outside zone plays on the goal line where you do have to make a decision. But a lot of times teams are just trying to pound it up the middle, and you need a back that can either jump over the top or a guy who's going to hit the hole now. And some backs are better hitting the hole now, and some backs are better at kind of seeing what's going to happen.
You also need a big offensive line to do that. And teams don't have the great offensive lines that they want. I think about Jacksonville last year and all the time they wasted not giving TJ Yeldon goal line carries. And it just led me to believe that the coaches didn't think that between their offensive line and him, that he wouldn't be able to be effective in that role. And that they tried Toby Gerhart. He couldn't get the job done. They tried Denard Robinson. You want to talk about a small guy at the goal line? That's another one who couldn't get the job done. And now they added Chris Ivory. I'm sure part of it's because they didn't have a good feeling about who they had at running back last year, working at the goal line. I want to stick with Detroit. And I don't know if you know Marvin Jones at all, but I know that he's going to be somebody that fantasy owners are going to look at as someone who's going to have this really good opportunity. And we've seen Marvin Jones play well. Based on what you know in the Detroit offense and the fact that Calvin's not going to be there, Jeff, do you think that there's a good opportunity here for Marvin Jones to obviously take advantage of the situation, but maybe get close to 1,000 yards and be a nice 1B to Golden Tate's potential 1A?
Someone's got to get the receptions. I mean, Stafford's going to throw the ball. He's got a rocket arm. We're going to protect him well. I mean, someone's going to have to get him, and they brought in Jones to fill a role. I mean, you don't pay a guy that type of money, to not throw him the football. So I think that, with our offense, the way it's going to be set up, there's going to be a lot of opportunities, for receptions, and we're going to sling the ball around. We're going to try to score as many points as possible. So I definitely think it's possible that, you can have a guy, in this system getting 1,000 yards. I mean, someone's got to fill the role of Calvin Johnson. I know he was hurt last year and wasn't the same player, but, Stafford has a lot of completions in that arm, so it's got to go to somebody.
Right. And it's hard to say fill that role because you think about Calvin Johnson and there's very few people in the NFL that can do the things that he can do. But as far as stay on the field and, try and stretch defenses, I think that he's somebody, I think Jones is somebody who can do it. I feel like he and Golden Tate have a fairly similar skill set. I think Tate's a little more explosive than Marvin, but I think they're both capable of making plays after the catch.
I think Tate led the league last year in yards after catch, right?
No. Maybe the year before.
You know your stuff, man. I gotta be. Are you kind of a stat head? You looking?
No, I think they told me that.
Okay.
They're talking about the offense. Maybe was it him last year?
That's for sure. It might not have been him, but I know that he had a lot of yak.
Or yards. Yeah, I think that they mentioned to me, like, kind of, we were talking about the offense, and they were saying, you know, that Tate's really good at, you know, you give him the ball, you know, somewhere within 5 yards and he can make the guy miss and get deep. So, you know, anytime you can do that, you know, that, we talked about offensive line play a little bit earlier in the running game. You know, the running game is slowly going away and teams are going towards this, idea of throwing these short passes instead of running the ball and letting wide receivers make guys miss, you know, spreading the defense out and getting a guy like Golden Tate, who's a great athlete, in space. And that's almost more productive now than, you know, running inside zone on first and 10.
Jeff, obviously you played with one of the more interesting coaches and certainly one of the more well-respected ones in Tom Coughlin. There are a lot of stories about, you know, him with the keeping, you know, players on the clock, showing up on time. He's going to go down as one of the legendary coaches in NFL history. Do you have some good stories about what it was like to play with play for Coughlin?
Well, the 5 minutes ahead is definitely true. I still keep my truck 5 minutes ahead. That has not cool. changed. I know a lot of the guys that, you know, the older guys, the offensive linemen that I know, their watches are still 5 minutes ahead. It's a good rule to live by. But yeah, this is a good 5 minute story. So I was out the day that Coach was doing his retirement press conference. It was at 10:30 a.m. And I figured to myself, okay, it was started at 10:30 a.m. So I kind of planned to be in front of, you know, a computer at 10:30 in the morning. Well, it started at 10:25. I totally did not think that it would start early. So I missed like 2 minutes of it. I was kind of disappointed in myself, but I should have known better. And
right.
We love Coach. You know, I think that what makes him different, and this is not to say that coaches don't care about us off the field, but I think, you know, Coughlin really wanted us to be better men, you know, husbands and fathers, and, you know, the charity work that he did with his foundation. I think that's what we really loved about him. Obviously, he's a great coach. We know all that, but I think what makes him special is that connection of wanting us to be, you know, better humans, than we are football players.
Do you think it was time for him to go in New York?
I think in all sports, you get to a certain point where it just kind of runs its course. I don't know if it was time for him to go. We still played hard for Coach. I don't think there's any denying that we had lack of effort.
Yeah.
You know, we lost a lot of games this year very close, and that was just that was not because of Coach. And I know a lot of us feel disappointed that we let him down, but it seemed to me that this was going to happen. Both sides were kind of just needed a break, needed to be, you know,
right,
going in a different direction.
It was a breakup. Happens sometimes.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you were frustrated when the mixing and matching of running backs in the Giants' backfield. How often do you think you knew which running back was going to get what work from week to week? I'm just wondering if...
They don't tell us that.
Right. No, like, I would imagine, like, in Minnesota and in Kansas City, you know what the deal is, but if there's a true split of work, you don't ever know who's going to do what before the game.
No. And I do, and it doesn't, we don't change the way we block as offensive linemen for who's in the game. But I go back to my point about the rhythm. You know, if you have a running back who you know is going to get the rock and run the same play again later in the game, you know, you get 3 yards, you get 2 yards, you could tell him, hey, dude, you see, you know, I hooked that guy, you know, let's get outside if we run this play again. Like that type of stuff you can do when you have a guy who gets 25 carries. But I never, you know, never thought in a game, oh, look who's in the huddle. I'm going to block differently. I mean, it doesn't work like that. And plus we ran a lot of no huddle, so you don't even need to know who's in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I mean, I like Rashad. I was glad he got, you know, bulk of the carries at the end of the season.
I just got a few more questions for you, Jeff. So let's say you have the first pick in your fantasy football draft this year. Who are you taking?
Oh, geez. I have no – I'll tell you what. This is a kind of a – I know I've won the 3 fantasy football leagues, but I've never done my drafts.
Who does it for you?
I have it outsourced. I have a buddy who does really well in his leagues. He's done 2 of them. And then you guys know Anita Marks, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did my last one last year. So this is what happens normally is I never plan to join a league and then I get like a text, hey, you want to join my fantasy football league? And so I'm like, sure. And it's always at the end of the training camp and I just don't feel like doing my draft. Don't have the patience for it. I haven't followed really. And then someone does my draft and then I run the team from there. So like I make the roster changes or trades or do whatever.
Okay.
I think I'm pretty good at picking up quarterbacks. Like I kind of pick up. I swap out quarterbacks a lot. And I kind of find the guy that's good, like good for that week. And that's the stuff I do during the season, but I don't really like, I have no idea right now.
So what is it that you look for when you make a lineup decision, be it a quarterback, running back, wide receiver?
Well, two things for quarterbacks.
Sure.
I typically don't have a great quarterback. So it's not like I have a guy who's, I think is going to throw four touchdown passes this week. So I typically try to find a quarterback whose team is going to get blown out. And then just they're going to rack up a lot of yards at the end of the game.
Interesting.
I guess assume that like that they're not going to throw a lot of interceptions. I guess it's tough to like tell. Like I picked up Mariota this year because I figured that they were going to be behind a lot. He'd be running a lot, so that gives me points there, and that they would just get garbage touchdowns. And it paid off some weeks. I put him in there the week he scored that 90-yard touchdown, whatever that was.
Yeah, crazy run that he had.
Yeah. So I put him in that week. So like that's what I look at quarterbacks. I've never had a top 12, 15 quarterback because I've always gone with the running backs or tight ends or wide receivers. I had Odell in 2014 that helped too.
Yeah, my team, does help.
I had Lynch, DeMarco Murray, Odell, and Gronkowski.
Wow.
2014.
You won.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yes.
So have you ever made a tough lineup decision with running backs, for example? Maybe you've got two guys that split. I'll give you an example, like a Rashad Jennings versus an Amir Abdullah. And I'm not saying you have to pick your favorite one of the two right now, but like, what do you look at there when you're judging two running backs that don't get that full workload?
I don't know. I think you just kind of get lucky. Like last year, I had a situation with Jeremy Hill because he wasn't like a full time running back. And some week I'd start him, he'd get 7 yards and no touchdowns, and next week he'd get 30 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think that's just luck. I don't know any way to put it. I mean, you can look at it like I look at the game, maybe from an offensive line versus defensive line perspective. Okay, Cincinnati's offensive line, they're playing X defensive line. Will they be able to run the ball? But I think you just kind of get lucky that week. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's sabermetrics that play into this, but I don't know. That's the way I did it.
Jeff, right. What's it like? Wikipedia paints a picture of you as a pretty religious guy. What's it like being one of the few Jewish NFL players?
I don't know. I mean, I get a lot of questions about it. I know that my brother and I are considered role models in the community, and we enjoy being role models. But otherwise, I mean, it's not that crazy. I mean, I don't keep kosher, so it's not like I need a separate meal plan. I do get questions sometimes about Judaism, and it's fun to talk to some teammates that are curious about the religion. A lot of teammates are very religious, and so we have some talks that are very interesting sometimes, and I enjoy that.
Last question. Every guest we have on, I want to start asking this question. We didn't do it last week with Luke Rogers, but this will be asked to everyone until it gets old. Now, I like to think that we kind of started this debate, or at least we were before it became too trendy, but is Die Hard a Christmas movie, Jeff Schwartz?
No.
Thank you.
You can watch Die Hard anytime.
Exactly. Thank you.
Well, you can watch a Christmas movie anytime too. It doesn't matter when you watch it.
I only watch Elf when Christmas comes around.
Yes.
I own Elf. I just watch it when Christmas comes around. But I can watch Die Hard anytime.
Oh man, Dave. Thank you. This is a great interview lined up, Dave. Thank you very much.
Oh, not that made it a great interview.
Wait. You have Die Hard as a Christmas movie?
We've had a long-running debate about whether or not Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and Adam is against it, but it takes place at Christmas. There are a bunch of Christmas-themed jokes and whatnot within the movie. Is it, is it Miracle on 34th Street?
Christmas.
No, that does not have to do with Christmas. And listen, it's not a Christmas story.
I know. But
it's also a movie that can definitely reflect some of the
Yeah, right. Of hostage takeover.
I feel like holiday movies should
Thou
be like
shalt
warm.
Not kill Adam.
I feel like the Christmas movies or holiday movies should be about like warmth and happiness and that type of thing. And Die Hard, I just don't
feel
that.
The ending is warmth and happiness,
right?
Oh yeah, the second one.
Except
there is lots of warmth.
His body was cold when it hit the Plaza.
Yeah,
there's nothing hot there.
It's crazy.
I mean, look, Jeff, you play for the Giants. Adam's a Giants fan. You guys don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I guess so. New York bias or something like that over here. Jeff, hey, thanks for taking the time. Good luck with your podcast. Everybody listen to it, the Block 'Em Up podcast, and we'll be rooting for the Lions this year, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Take care.
See you guys. Told you Die Hard's not a Christmas movie.
Whatever, you Giants guys.
Oh man, I'm so happy about that. And he was so dismissive of it too. That was the good thing. Like, it, to me, it's just crazy that people are so wrong about this, and so many people are so wrong. But anyway,
you have your little belief.
Let's go to the emails. fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. please put football podcast in the subject line, lest I think it is a baseball email. Rodney from Leesburg, Virginia. Best bad guy in a movie, hands down, has to be Bricktop from Snatch. Have you guys seen
that
movie?
No.
No.
I recommend it. It's totally awesome.
No, that means it's awful.
No. It's really cool.
It's going to be 2 hours of boredom.
No, it's not at all. It's anything but boring.
It's probably a chick flick. Let me guess.
Well, with that name.
Yeah, with that name, I've seen some chick flicks, but not that one.
Cat's name is Snatch.
Yep.
And he spends 2 hours looking all over his house for his cat.
Again, the double entendre there is a...
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
There is a dog in there, by the way, in that movie. All right, so here's a real question. It's from Heath in a northern suburb of Houston.
Kansas City?
Technically, that's true. Dallas. I'm not taking requests for suburbs, dude. Just say you're from Houston.
Oh, come on, Dave. Life.
Heath's from Houston, damn it. Heath, read the email. Houston.
Dear Skinner, Rogers, and Ellis. Well,
principles.
So, I'm in a 10-team two-keeper league, half-point PPR. Players can be kept twice, so 3 years in total. Who do I keep? Two of these guys. Gronkowski in the first round would be my last year to keep him. This is half-point PPR. Danny Woodhead in the 9th round. Matt Jones in the 12th. Jordy Nelson in the 13th.
You keep two?
Yep.
This is easy.
It's Gronk and Jordy.
Yeah, you're keeping your studs.
Okay. Eric from...
Unless just depending on where he picks, and he knows he can get Gronk back and keep him for two more years.
Then you go Matt Jones in the 12th?
You go Matt Jones in the 12th, and you go Jones and Nelson, and then you just...
You wouldn't keep Woodhead in the 9th and a half-point PPR?
I just think Jones is going to have... Obviously, we're
There's more upside,
we're,
I guess,
We're talking
Jones.
About this in April. You know, this is in May and they've added somebody in the draft that's of significance, then sure, it's a different story.
That's the theme of today's podcast, is it's April.
Danny Woodhead is going to be a guy that finishes higher in the rankings than I ever would care to value him at.
In a full-point PPR, I think you go Woodhead here. In a half-point PPR, it's close. But I think, you know, you just look at what Jones could be as the Redskins' full-time guy. Again, right now they sit with, you know, Matt Jones and Chris Thompson. That's not going to be what they end up with coming out of, you know, the draft.
All right, anyway, Eric from a territory of Dave's choice.
Beckley, West Virginia.
Says, you might have to help me with the pronunciation here. Dear Hans, Simon, and General Ramon?
Ramon Esperanza? Okay. Is that a diehard reference?
Yeah. Ramon.
His name was Ramon, huh?
I guess so. Well.
Is that the last one?
No, it's number two.
No, that's Die Hard 2.
Oh.
Die Harder.
Which is a number two when it comes to movies, but he has a two-part question. I was recently asked to take over a team in a long-standing half-point PPR two-player keeper league where I work. This is not the same guy, is it? It's required that each team keep two players for better or worse. I made the rookie mistake of agreeing to the terms of the league before seeing the team, and I see little keeper value with any player. But I can't back out now because I work with everyone in the league and see most of them 5 days a week.
I mean, you could quit your job.
So first of all,
letter of resignation out the door, out of the league.
What practices do you feel are best when bringing new members into existing keeper leagues? What do you think?
Oh, you got to tell everybody the details of the league and what the rules are. So it's kind of BS that it's one thing if they try to explain it to you, Eric, and you were like, yeah, whatever, I'm in the league. But when we've got an opening in our keeper league, usually we tell everybody what the rules are. That's basically the long and the short of it. I think it's almost like a common courtesy to do that.
Okay.
Well, you have to do that. I mean, you would do that whether you're starting a league.
Right.
You would tell everybody what the rules are.
Unless you're just, I mean, some people are like, you want to join my fantasy league? Yeah. Like, they don't even think about, you know, details sure. about catches or anything.
But that's on the
person. You know that there are tons of people that play fantasy and they don't even realize what type of a league they're in
sure.
until they're in their draft room and it's round five. And holy cow, this is a PPR league? Why didn't anybody tell me this is a PPR league?
I'll give you an example of what happened with two guys that our audience, you know, one they know for sure, one they probably know, but in my fantasy basketball keeper league that I run, I had two openings, so I asked Heath Cummings and Chris Towers if they wanted to join. And I knew one roster was better than the other, so I was going to, you know, I did it based on, okay, these are the two teams that quit. This one's team A, this one's team B. First guy that responds gets team A, the first guy, you know, gets team B. So Chris ended up with a much better keeper situation because he was the first one to respond. He picked just by coincidence, got the better team. So Heath was awful this past year. Chris finished third. You know, it's kind of circumstantial. I think depending on, you know, how you, sort of hand a team over to the next person. You know, I've seen some that, you know, you have a supplemental draft instead of just giving them the keepers. So let's say you keep, what do you say? They keep two players?
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So you keep two players. So then everybody picks their two players. And instead of, his name's Eric. Eric keeping the two players from the roster he inherits, he gets to pick two players from that roster plus the leftovers. So let's say like, we talked to Jeff Schwartz. He had that, amazing team in 2014, right? So then he keeps Gronk and Marshawn Lynch, right? So then he throws back DeMarco Murray into the pool. Eric, if he's in that league, he would get the opportunity to keep DeMarco Murray as opposed to somebody on his team. You know, so that makes it maybe a little bit more fair.
It's like the rule five draft.
Right.
But that would make me angry as a fellow owner that he gets to cherry pick a keeper from somebody else's team just because he's taking over a team that isn't fair. What if it was somebody that was on waivers? Pick a guy off waivers and you don't even have to lose a draft pick for him. He's on your team magically.
Maybe somebody that was picked up off waivers?
No, someone who is currently on waivers. So the season ends.
Right.
He's not on a roster.
Okay, so somebody didn't own Kelvin Benjamin.
Right.
Or Jordy Nelson.
Okay.
Right.
But I would imagine in a keeper league there would be somebody who is shrewd enough to do it. I think that's a little more fair than, all right, Team X couldn't keep Jordy Nelson, right. So now you get the chance to keep
it. No, I'm just saying that's a scenario. It's a little trickier when you have only two keepers. You know, that's probably a better scenario when you have four keepers. You know, so then you're looking at how many teams actually have five great keepers, you know, that are going to – I guess a lot of teams probably have – not a lot of teams, but there are probably several teams that have five great keepers. But you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let me get done with this podcast here. I'll ask you three keeper questions. First from Eric. He needs two. Jonathan Stewart, second round. Emmanuel Sanders, 9th. Tyler Eifert, 10th. Carson Palmer, 13th.
Yeah, I see why the guy who originally had that team quit the league. Eifert is a no-brainer in round 10. I think that's great value.
Sanders in round 9.
Yeah, I'm thinking you go with those two, and you don't commit to Sanders necessarily being your number two receiver.
Okay.
But you don't have to draft a tight end.
You're definitely not keeping Jonathan Stewart in the second round.
This one's from Jacques. We're playing standard scoring, three receivers, two running backs. I need to keep three. Antonio Brown, Randall Cobb, Cam Newton, Tyler Eifert, Mark Ingram, Carlos Hyde, Josh Gordon, Kevin White, or Jordan Matthews. This guy's keepers are a little better. Pick three.
Brown for sure.
We got Ingram, Hyde.
Yeah. I'm debating from the group of Newton, Eifert, Ingram, and that's it.
Remember, it's not round specific.
Do we know how many? Right. I know. You just keep them. Do we know how many teams are in the league?
No.
Do we know where Jacques is from?
Yes, you would know.
He's from Alaska.
All right, hurry up here.
I'm throwing back Cam.
Wait, he's got.
You got to throw back a lot of guys.
Oh, of those
from
three.
The guys I said. So Antonio Brown, Tyler Eifert, Mark Ingram.
You would take Tyler Eifert over Randall Cobb or Carlos Hyde?
Correct.
All right.
I would keep Brown. I'd keep Brown, Ingram, and Hyde.
Okay. Keep Brown, Ingram, and Hyde. That sounds like you're, you know, a verb. This is from James. 10-team PPR keeper league. I can keep one player for 2 years and lose the round. Todd Gurley in the fourth or David Johnson in the 16th. Woo!
Oh, boy.
You're keeping David Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, you've got him for 2 years and
that's ridiculous.
You lose no sweat off your drafts. He wrote in the email that he thinks Gurley is something special. I agree. You can always redraft
him. So is David Johnson, though.
Yeah. David Johnson is more specialer.
Well, in this situation. At 16, yeah.
And in a PPR league, they're very close to neck and neck. At least they finished very close to neck and neck last year. And Gurley had more work. Sky is the limit for DJ.
Lots of thank yous to give out. First to Dave and Jamie, of course. Thank you, guys. How fun.
You're welcome.
I would prefer my thank you in American currency, Adam. Catch my drift.
I do. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Good.
Some shekels with your name on it. Although that's not American currency, so never mind. Thank you to Jeff Schwartz, most of all, for coming on. And, of course, to all of you for emailing. This is Fantasy Football Today. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. And thanks for listening.
Bye.